The longest season in the history of humanity is close to coming to an end. And we're getting our answers. A couple things left to go. We're going to be talking about the Premier League race, Jules.
Yep.
We'll be talking about what's going on in Italy. We're talking about Rangnick. Lots of good stuff in there. You're going away, which makes everybody sad, but you'll be coming back.
Yes.
So stick with us. You'll be replaced by a balder, taller.
Older.
Sorry.
Better footballer in his day.
I'd say just a tiny bit. Yeah, of course.
Anyway, Robbo will be replacing you next week, so stay tuned. But let's start at the top because Liverpool played Chelsea. It was a big deal because a trophy presentation came afterwards. Chelsea effectively needing a point from the last two games.
Yeah.
Liverpool ended up winning 5-3. Wild match. Earlier in the day, United held to a 1-1 draw. Just want to get people to understand where we are set up on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
Chelsea and Manchester United are a point ahead of Leicester.
Yeah.
Chelsea play Wolves. Effectively, what this means is if Chelsea win or draw, they are guaranteed to be in the Champions League next season.
Yeah.
Leicester against Manchester United is effectively a playoff to get into the Champions League. United just need to avoid defeat. If they can do that, then they're through. I think that's the easiest way to go and understand this.
And if there's a draw between Leicester and Manchester United and that Chelsea lose, you've got Leicester and Chelsea on the same amount of points, and then Leicester has a much, much, much better goal difference than Chelsea, so Chelsea would miss out on the top four.
Exactly. So Chelsea can't lose against Wolves.
Yeah.
Wolves effectively are pretty much guaranteed a Europa League spot. I mean, there's some combinations where it might not happen, but it's kind of irrelevant because there's no way Arsenal win the FA Cup anyway. So that doesn't... but we'll be talking about that more. So I don't know that there's too much to say about the game. It was pretty wild with Liverpool racing out the 3-0 lead. I don't know if you have anything you want to flag.
Yeah, I do. I've got a question for you. Is it, if you're a manager and your tactic for one game in a different competition against a different opposition, against a team that play in a very different style, doesn't press the same, doesn't attack the same, and that works, you know where I'm coming.
Yep, I know where you're going.
And 3 days later, you've got a game probably even more important than the one that you've just won. And you've won it brilliantly and you deserve to win and you were really on top and everything. Do you really play the same formation, the same team? Do you really put the same 11 players when you've seen Arsenal struggling in midweek because they clearly look tired after the FA Cup game? You saw United struggling as well in terms of fitness-wise after 3 days after playing in the FA Cup semi-final against you. And let me finish. And do you really, really leave on your bench arguably your best player since the restart with Giroud and Pulisic? And you leave Pulisic on the bench in a game like this when you know that you're going to face Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson on the other side. So much, much better fullbacks than, I was going to say the two clowns, not the two clowns, but the two guys you faced, Brendan Williams and Wan-Bissaka against United, where true Mount and William did a great job. But come on, don't put Pulisic on the bench.
I don't have a problem with them playing that formation. This idea is like, oh, they need to match them up, and that's why you go through it. It's nonsense. It's you play a formation based on the characteristics of the other team. And I think the reality is I don't think Lampard is wed to a particular formation. He likes having the options for now, right? Leaving out Pulisic, I think maybe he made a calculation and said, I need Pulisic on Sunday to make sure we don't lose against Wolves. That is far more important.
But the game on Sunday becomes irrelevant if you get a point yesterday. If you get a point on so you can't be thinking about the Wolves game before playing the Liverpool game. Because if Pulisic starts and you get a draw or a win at Liverpool,
I understand
then
that. I think he probably feels you're more likely to get points against Wolves at home than you are against Liverpool away. On the night of their trophy presentation and the scouts outside and all the other jazz. That's what I imagined. Earlier in the day in the other game, Manchester United. Do you want to have a go at him for bad marking on corners too? Because, you know, like in Chelsea's, the number of goals that Chelsea have given up this season. Yeah, the number of losses. Said, it's very relevant. The next person who brings up the number of losses, I'm going to take a sledgehammer to the head. I'm just warning you, okay? If there's a sledgehammer around and if there's...
What's worrying is not the number of losses. It's the amount of goal they concede on set pieces, which is true.
Yeah.
Which is the same for Arsenal. And they work a lot on training. Both of them are training on set pieces, offensively, defensively, and they still can't get it right. it's not just about the size. I want him to stop saying, oh yeah, you know, it's not just about the size. There's a way of scoring on set pieces.
I refuse to believe that when he says we need to get taller defenders.
But that's what he said. Okay, I agree with you. I refuse to believe that he said it.
Listen, I think by this stage, because I'm very old, I've known Frank Lampard.
Since his teenage years. Yeah. We can say that.
I mean, the guy does not actually believe.
Don't say
that
it.
They just have taller. No, but you know why he says it?
Why?
For the idiot mass of punditocracy ex-pros out
there.
The same ones. No, I heard it again. Like, well, you're marking zonally, marking man-to-man. I don't like the zonal marking on corners. It's 2020, man. It's 20 freaking 20. You still want to make up this nonsense about man-to-man versus zonal, and this is why they can't. It's about execution. I agree with you. They need to do better on set pieces. Get a set piece expert to help you out.
Yeah.
But I want to just turn to Pogba because your boy... Our boy, I kind
of
feel.
Yeah, of course.
Got slaughtered because free kick and he's in the wall. The ball comes towards his face and he puts his hands up like a little wuss.
The ball arrives very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Who would have imagined that somebody might kick a ball
hard? No, I'm just saying. Yeah, but it's not like it's a slow ball and you just go, hey, right. And saves it.
I am trying to deliberately provoke you because I suspect deep down I agree with you. Now, my thing is, I think he switched off for a second. Because it's not that he's scared to be in the wall. He's been in wall. He's 6'5". He's been in walls his entire career. He's had balls slammed at him. He knows what to do in those situations. I think he switched off. And the fact that the ball came quickly, that shocked him. And he had this natural reaction. Shouldn't have happened. But does it mean that he's not brave? No, because that's what some people said. He's a disgrace again?
I think. Yeah, you're right. He's been in wars. Wars is different. You protect your face. You protect your privates.
Right.
That's what you do. This is very different. For me, it's a reflex. It's a bad reflex. Everybody can have it. The ball, a ball, whatever ball, comes fast towards your face. You put your hands,
especially if you switch off.
Maybe you're right. Or maybe didn't expect the ball to come that quickly towards him.
Not a big deal
because the ball is going really wide. So if you poke, but you think, okay, he's going to bend it over the wall.
He switched off. He didn't realize where the ball was going.
I don't think you can blame him for having a bad reflex. And then he tried to do the theater after that and pretend that his mouth was touched.
Because he's clever. Who's getting in the Champions League? Let's do a prediction so people can laugh at us. In fact, they'll be laughing at me because you'll be on holiday.
It hasn't changed since...
Chelsea and United, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Who's going to finish higher?
United. United third, Chelsea fourth. I've told you since for the beginning.
All right. Time will tell. All right, Jose, I kind of feel like we've given Leicester short shrift here because the focus is on Chelsea and United.
Yeah.
We both seem to agree that United will avoid defeat on the last day of the season. The reality is Leicester control their fate.
Yeah, they do. And that's exactly what Rodgers said on Sunday. I was at the game at Tottenham. That's exactly what he said. He said, you know, it's a final for us, but it's in between our hands. If we win and we can beat them at the King Power Stadium, even without fans, and then win the Champions League. I don't know. There's a few things. Psychologically, even if they didn't play too badly against Spurs, but they conceded far too many goals. I don't know how he would play. I told you on Monday that back three is scaring me. Wes Morgan is scaring me. I mean, I don't even know how Wes Morgan can still play in the Premier League right now.
You said last week. Stop picking on the guy.
No, but I don't care. So yeah, but you're going to play against Greenwood, Martial, Rashford, Pogba, and Fernandes. So you need to be really solid defensively, because if you concede, it'd be obviously far more difficult for you to win.
And Lindelof, Maguire, and De Gea are playing against Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, but okay.
Uh huh. See. I don't know. Jamie Vardy had nothing
against Spurs. And I know United are not going to play the way Spurs. And that's the only bright light I see for Leicester, is that even away, United will go to Leicester and will attack. That's what they do. They can't do anything differently. You would want Solskjaer to say to them, okay, let's drop a bit deeper. Let's not just go everybody forward and et cetera, but that's their style. They can play on the counter, but I don't see them doing that on Sunday.
What's the implication, do you think, from United's perspective, if they do screw this up? Because obviously it's going to cost them a whole bunch of money.
Yeah,
I think it's going to actually, haven't mentioned this, but I read it enough times and it's been confirmed by several people that they have, you know, one of their sponsorship contracts if they're out of the Champions League for two consecutive seasons.
I think there's maybe more than one even.
Probably more than
one.
I don't know, does this put this, because look, I know some people out there on social media who are Mourinho-holics who love Jose even more than you or I do,
yeah.
who point out, well, wait a minute, Jose finished second. This guy is going to finish, if this guy screws it up and he finishes fifth, why are we all praising Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Yeah, I mean...
is it a reflection on him or is it, or does he have the alibi of, look, Bruno Fernandes only came in January, no Pogba, no Rashford, which is my view.
Yeah. I mean, Pogba out for most of the season, Rashford certainly for the, what, since January to, you know, to March or something like that, and then coming back. I still feel, and I know it's strange because we probably said it last summer, but I still feel like you need to give Solskjaer another season with a full preseason with Bruno Fernandes already there, with a fit Pogba as much as you can, and then see. Let's not forget that incredible run they went on to, that started before the break, and then since the restart, especially since the restart, the teams they played against, no offense, but were not the greatest sides, right?
So they haven't been challenged, you think? They haven't...
It's a bit, you know, it's a bit... I think there's a bit of a question mark over, okay, how good are they really are in normal context against the top side in the league.
Yeah.
And
I guess in the FA Cup, he rested players.
He did rest some players. And I just think it was one of those days where just nothing went for him at all, I guess. But... I don't know. I'm still not completely convinced about Solskjaer. I've seen a lot of positives and I think a lot of things that they've done really well, but I'm not just completely convinced. Do you see what I mean?
I think it would be very damaging to the brand and to sort of the project, another fifth placed finish.
But then
I think it's
going to
impact what they spend in the summer. And we know that they can spend a ton of money, and even with the pandemic, they can outspend people. But I think then the question becomes, okay, who do we trust to make the decisions on who to bring in? Or are we going to have more of this Lindelof buy nonsense? I think it's going to get pretty rocky if they don't do it. Perhaps unfairly so.
Yeah. But they can also win the Europa League and qualify for Champions League that way. And it's another
that's
trophy.
True.
And that's very possible as well.
I got to run one other thing for you, because regular listeners will know I have a soft spot for Alan Shearer. I'm biased.
Yeah.
He said something last night which really surprised me on Match of the Day, which is the sort of the flagship program here in the United Kingdom. He said that he thought Mason Greenwood was going to break the Premier League record. Now, the guy's 18 years old. Mm. Alan Shearer is not somebody, he's not grumpy old pundit, but he's also not somebody who generally gets super excited and makes mad projections about a guy who's effectively playing his first full season in the Premier League. That really, really, really surprised me.
Yeah.
I should also point out, maybe it was just a way to remind people that he holds the Premier League record.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's like in 13, 14 years' time, he could break the Premier League record. Can you see that?
So my issue with Greenwood, and he's an incredible talent, and it's not like Rashford, when Rashford was not really the best in his age group. Greenwood has always been the best, has always been scoring loads. The only problem I have right now is, what's his best position? So right now he plays on the right of a 4-2-3-1. Is that his best position when he can come inside on his left foot? Is he better as a number nine, as a proper number nine? Is he better as a second striker? Is he better to play on the left because he's left-footed and he just can't play there right now because Rashford is there? Is he better as a 10?
Center forward.
A proper central forward. He can hold the ball up.
And I think as he grows and grows stronger, you know, this whole holding the ball up. I mean, there's different ways to do it, right? You don't need to be the size of a house.
No,
first of all, he's going to fill out and get stronger, obviously. But, you know, Sergio Aguero can hold the ball up and he's this tall. So
It was more like, does he have
I think
everything?
When you can strike the ball so well with both feet, when you've got such an eye for positions, I think Rashford goes back wide or maybe in the future you play two or whatever. Rashford, I think, has more of the mentality of the provider anyway.
Yeah.
Although obviously he scores a ton of goals too. So, but I don't know.
He's very exciting.
You know, no pressure there, kid.
You're
the greatest
right.
center forward in the English football scene in the last 30 years, you know, putting that on your head. So,
yeah, you're right. Cool. And it'd be very interesting to see next season, because then the pressure will also increase on Greenwood. No one expected him this season at all, even probably at the club. So, to see how good he's been. Well, more than good. How great he's been already. You expect more. You would expect more season after season, really. So it'd be very interesting to see his development.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match
with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules, for months, everybody's written, Ralf Rangnick will be the new Milan manager. He's going to be manager Supremo. And technical director and Supremo rolled into one. He's going to have more power than anybody in the game's ever had. I wrote a column about this. You can get my thoughts there.
And then it doesn't happen.
And well, one thing, I mean, I was always told all along, he hasn't signed yet. He hasn't signed yet. He hasn't signed yet.
But he was all agreed, yet. But he just hadn't signed, right?
Yeah, but you know what? This happens all the time.
Yeah,
things
yeah,
are
no,
agreed,
no, I agree.
And then they don't sign, whatever. They're going to stick with Stefano Pioli. And they made the point that, well, Pioli deserves it. Are you buying this deserves argument?
So my issue is, this is my issue. If they had already an agreement with Klopp or Guardiola, right, in place, imagine, that is Klopp or Guardiola instead of Rangnick. Regardless of how well Pioli would have done in the last few weeks, they surely would not have told Guardiola or Klopp,
exactly.
Actually, we changed our mind, Pioli is the man we need. That would not happen. So they must have had some sort of doubts overall over Rangnick, right?
Yeah. And well, first of all, I mean, this is what I wrote too. The initial premise that, well, he deserves the job, he deserves to keep his job. Maybe I find myself that I am more ruthless than a hedge fund, but... You shouldn't make these decisions in football based on whether somebody deserves to keep his job. You make these decisions based on whether you're better off with somebody else. And as you said, if it was Klopp or Guardiola, you would have said, okay, bye-bye, Stefano.
Yeah,
you know,
you could have won 10 in a row. I don't care. He's a better one in town.
I think it was twofold. One is they're realizing Rangnick is objectively a difficult person. Like a lot of geniuses
Of course.
Are difficult people.
Yeah, yeah.
But secondly, I think they also looked around and said, well, wait a minute. We're going to give this guy complete control. We're going to make him a Sir Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger type manager.
But whose idea was that in the beginning? Who thought this could be a good idea?
It was Rangnick's idea.
Yeah, but I mean, no one at Milan was forced to agree to give him all those powers, right?
They weren't, but I think they looked at it and they looked at what the Red Bull organization has done.
Yeah.
And they said, that's who we want to be. Because, let's face it, you know, over the years, first of all, the guy is a football genius. I mean, I don't know, anybody who disputes that about Rangnick is just a fool. But secondly, they said, this is what we want to be. We want to go and we want to produce this continuous assembly line of talent. We want with the clever scouting and the analytics and whatever. We want to play this exciting football that draws people in. If he can do it in freaking Leipzig. I don't know if you've been there. I have.
Yeah, I
don't disrespect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I will disrespect. It's Leipzig, okay?
Yeah.
Versus Milan, which is the land of everything. The Duomo, fashion, food, skiing in 2 hours away, the beach 2 hours away. If you can do it there, I mean, imagine the people we could attract to Milan.
Yeah,
right?
No.
So
I get
the
that.
Logic was there. But I said this all along, though. The guy is a director, football, organizer, recruiter. Put him in charge of everything. You know, put Paolo back where Paolo does his best work, which is, you know, not making decisions on
ambassador.
and Ricky Massara, but leave somebody else to coach because he hasn't coached that often. He's you know, he was a caretaker manager while they were waiting for Nagelsmann. He did a couple years before in the first season back up, but you know.
And do you think that at some point that was on the table when they realized that okay, Pioli could stay, and then they said to Rangnick, okay, let's change a little bit the plan. Pioli will stay and you still can come and oversee everything.
Okay,
and then maybe...
They say that was never a serious option.
Right.
I think it was the most logical option.
Yeah.
And these are logical, rational people.
Or plan B, at least, you know.
It should have been their plan A, frankly.
Yeah.
I think maybe they put it forward and Rangnick says, nine! You know, I'm going to be in charge, you know. I don't know. I think they're better with Pioli, but they got to fix this recruitment thing. They have to, you know, when Boban left, he said there's two souls at the club, right? One of all the great ex-pros and stuff who appreciate veterans and, you know, and they have the Ibra situation, yeah, of course. And they're going to say, oh, we want winners, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got the other soul of the club, which is, you know, we're hamstrung by this debt. We're hamstrung by financial fair play. We want to continue bringing in talented young players and developing them to sell out, to sell on. And then eventually we'll keep them and we'll grow and whatever.
Yeah.
They have to sort that out. I think that conflict is still there and will continue to be there.
A couple other points I want to hit on this one, Jules. Just, first of all, Rangnick is 62 years old.
Doesn't speak Italian.
Doesn't speak Italian. In Syria, we have this idea. We know that we're not the best in the world anymore and haven't been for some time. But we have this idea that we're so difficult, that it's so difficult for people to come from outside to parachute.
Like, there's not many foreign managers who have gone there recently who have done really well recently even.
No, and who've never played there before. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah.
Paolo Fonseca, obviously, yeah. he's doing well. But I also think we vastly overestimate this idea. We vastly overestimate the importance of the manager who can talk and whatever and the language. And it seems kind of silly to me, frankly. Yeah, I think we need to move beyond that.
You also know that you've got maybe the best programmer forming managers in Covecciano.
Mm-hmm.
And you would naturally trust people who've come out of there more than someone who you're not really sure. Do you see what I mean?
But so if you want to bring
if you
in
go
somebody.
Between the De Zerbi or a Rangnick, maybe you look at it twice and say, okay, we're going to keep.
Right.
We're going to stay with this. Or we're going to go for De Zerbi more than a foreign manager, for example.
I get it. But, you know, these ideas that it's so different. I don't think. First of all, if you watch the games, right? You look at the amount of attacking football.
Yeah, it's less Italian now than ever before.
It's not like that. It's really not that different. It's probably closer to the Bundesliga in many
that's
ways.
True.
So I don't buy that argument. But the other thing I just want to get you on was this idea of the super manager, which is what Rangnick would have become. Now, I made the point that, Sir Alex had that, and he did very well. But, you know, Sir Alex retired nearly 8 years ago. Right?
Yeah, seven.
And also, Sir Alex got to that level. Wenger had that, and Gazidis knows all too well that Wenger had that. But also, Wenger grew to that level because in his first years he had David Dean, who, you know, really had a huge influence. But also, when Wenger became omnipotent in the last 4 or 5 years, that's also when Arsenal started sliding pretty badly, right? So why would you think of reintroducing that model?
That's why I asked you earlier whose idea it was, because I would be flabbergasted that a club right now, especially a top club like Milan, would think this is a good idea. Yeah. Surely they look at other clubs and see that the one club who doesn't have a sporting director right now of the top clubs is Manchester United. And what club has been a mess in terms of recruitment and planning and forward planning in the last 7 years? Manchester United. Yeah. And so why would you go and think the normal structure of a CEO, a sporting director, and then all the other heads, and then a manager, and then et cetera, et cetera. Why would you think, you know what, let's go back and do the guy can do everything? Because just not going to work right now. It doesn't work anymore.
And by the way, those people, because people said, but Pep and Jurgen Klopp are super powerful. Yeah, they're super powerful at their club. First of all, they won something to become super powerful.
Yeah.
But secondly, there are other people there who are specialized. You know, Michael Edwards is a really important figure.
I don't think Klopp and Liverpool win what they've won the last 2 years without Michael Edwards.
And I always remind them about Klopp, about that wonderful story that I think is in our former colleague's Ralf Honigstein's book about Klopp, where, you know, he needed a winger. He wanted Julian Brandt. He desperately wanted Julian Brandt. The club went to him and says, man, this Mohamed Salah guy is pretty good. Get him instead. It's like, nine, but Julian Brandt, right? And then in the end, they say, no, we think it's Salah. And Klopp took a step back and says, okay, fine. Let's go with Salah, and I'm going to give him a chance.
Yeah.
And then you know what happened next. Salah goes out and nearly wins the Ballon d'Or. That is what an intelligent manager who knows his limits, right? Because I'll tell you what, if they'd signed Julian Brandt, not a bad player, obviously, right?
No, of course. And
they might not have won.
Well, we don't know, but we don't know. But if you're the manager.
I don't think Brandt was going to go and score 45 goals and whatever. But
But if you're the manager and also the sporting director, and you said, I want to recruit Gab Marcotti, and someone said, well, I think you should go and recruit.
You're having a conversation with yourself.
Yeah, and you said, okay. And then no one challenges you. And that's the problem that it would have. And if Leipzig don't do it, and they haven't done it with him because they've got Nagelsmann there, why would Milan do it? That's the thing I never got, really.
Precisely.
And for Pioli, I mean, they gave him a new deal, obviously, a two-year deal, which is great. But the pressure next season now, which he can surely cope with, and I guess they would keep doing what they've been doing so well since the restart. But what happens in December when you've won three games?
That's going to be an issue. The other big issue that they're working on right now is Ibra.
Yeah.
Keeper Dom.
Have you changed your mind?
I don't.
You still would not keep him?
This is what I would do. I go to Ibra and I say, Ibra, you're 38 years old. You're wonderful. You like it in Milan. You're part of this thing. You're important to us.
Spent 100 league games now?
If you leave here, what are you going to do? You'll go to Hammarby. You already own the club. And how about you stay? We will pay you what you would earn at Hammarby. Plus bonuses.
I'm sure.
And then you get to enjoy it.
And he would stay.
You stay here. You enjoy it. Make a gesture of love towards this club. Because I tell you what, if you go to Sweden, you know, the reality is they play the summer league, whatever. You know, you're not going to get that many games out of it because then they'll have the big long winter break. Just come here and contribute.
I think you will.
Time will tell.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Milan. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Inter held 0-0 by Fiorentina. Antonio Conte is told second place is in jeopardy. And he replies, well, second place is just first among losers. Jules, he's fully in character, isn't he?
It's brilliant. I mean, between that press conference and the one at the weekend as well, he's just been brilliant. He's so grumpy. He's so unhappy, probably because he felt that maybe if there was one season where Juve were there for the taking, it could have been this one. And that Inter should have been far closer in the title race and maybe even winning it. So I can understand his frustration in a way. I think he has made mistakes like we all do. But I just love it when he's that grumpy. I have to say, his answer that just...
Love the fact that he hates finishing second.
And on the other hand, Gab, Juventus need just one victory in the last three games now to secure their ninth straight Serie A title. It's a bit like... Italy is a bit like the Bundesliga now, right? In terms of domination of one club.
In terms of domination, yeah. I don't think it's structurally like the Bundesliga. I think the reasons that Juve have been so dominant is that Milan and Inter have been, over the past decade, have been so poorly run.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult for them to close the gap. But I mean, historically, in terms of reach, in terms of supporters, Inter and Milan should be competing with Juventus. It really isn't the kind of gap that you have in the Bundesliga, you know, between Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, Hamburg, you know, Hamburg gone now, but, you know, historically, the other super clubs. That, I think, is, you know, both Milan and Inter have had financial fair play issues and you know, all the stuff they've had. That is, I want to see more of an open race. I mean, it's more difficult for Roma and Napoli and obviously Atalanta to compete. But Inter and Milan, you know, when you look at a decade, they can match Juve in terms of resources, fan base, commercial income. And so they got a lot of catching up to do.
Between Juve and Bayern, you would think that the one who could lose that domination first would be Juve, right?
Absolutely, which might explain why Andrea Agnelli got himself elected to be head of the European Clubs Association. Now, it was a wild day in the championship. Jules, tell me all about it. Who's joining Leeds in the Premier League?
It was incredible, Gab. You pretty much had everything still to play for: automatic promotion between West Bromwich Albion, Fulham and Brentford. And he ended up being West Brom, who somehow, got to stay second to come up with Leeds. Although Brentford with a win would have overtaken them. Then there was Fulham as well. You had fight for the last place in the playoffs with Cardiff, Nottingham Forest, and Swansea. Swansea and Nottingham Forest needed a six-goal swing and Forest to lose and Swansea to win for Swansea to be sixth in the playoff. And I don't think there were many Forest fans who thought that could happen. And guess what? It happened. Swansea won 4-1 and scored at the last minute, 93rd minute, to get that six-goal swing to overtake Forest on goal difference to finish sixth and qualify for the playoff to go up to the Premier League. And then at the bottom as well, you had teams fighting not to go down. And in the end, Barnsley, who went away to Brentford and won at Griffin Park for the last ever game at Griffin Park, to stay up in the dying second of it. It was just mental to watch it. It was brilliant.
Barnsley, the mighty Tykes. So playoff picture is Swansea against Brentford and Cardiff against Fulham.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Over on the website, we'll be making our cases for the Premier League Player of the Year, Gab, ahead of the award on Friday. Who you got?
Ah, so I think, as you know, I think these awards are stupid, especially in a team game and especially in a season like this one.
Yeah.
So I went with a left field choice. I'm going to go with Danny Ings.
Nice.
He scored more goals from open play than anybody in the Premier League. He plays for a team in the bottom half of the table. At one point, he went 2.5 years without scoring a goal in the Premier League. He was injured. He was out for 11 months, something like that. He's a class act. He's not somebody who's been coddled. He played Sunday League football between the ages of 10 and 15 because he was cut from his team. I think it's a great story. I think he's a great player. And I just look at it. You take any of the other candidates away from their team. You take De Bruyne away from City. City still finished second. You take any one of those guys away from Liverpool, so Liverpool probably still win the league. This is what makes it different.
So you take you take Danny Ings out of Southampton and they finish 14th instead of 12th.
No, you take Danny Ings out of Danny Ings, who scored half of Southampton's goals this season. You take him out, and then next season they're playing against Wycombe Wanderers. Kylian Mbappe has made it official. He's staying at Paris Saint-Germain. He's on the cover of the new FIFA game. Joy all around for Paris Saint-Germain fans and gamers like you, Jules. Oh, and you might get to see Edinson Cavani up close at Leeds United next season.
Well, maybe. I mean, starting with Mbappe, we knew he would stay, but he just said it himself at halftime against Celtic in the friendly they played on Tuesday night. It was good for him to say it, that he was committed and that he wanted to win a lot of things. He seems very happy there. For the club, this is no news. The news that they want to hear is him saying to them, okay, I'm going to extend my contract. That's the whole idea. His contract finishes in June 2022, which means that next summer he will have...
He's got all the leverage.
Of course.
And so, Cavani?
And Cavani... Leeds are really keen. he's receiving loads of offers from everywhere. Boca Juniors, Benfica, Italian clubs... Anything you want, MLS, so he would have to decide. But I would love to see him at least in the Premier League with Bielsa. He ticks a lot of the boxes of what Bielsa wants for a striker: prolific, pressing, running, having a collective mind. So I think it could work. But he's 33 and he earned 12 million a year, so I'm not sure.
So he's going to have to earn a lot less.
Oh, yeah. Kevin De Bruyne could set a new Premier League assist record, Gab, on Sunday. He needs just one more to equal Thierry Henry's record of 20 assists in 2003. Do you think he will do it? And have you been really impressed with him this season?
I've been impressed with him because he's a great player, maybe one of the best passers in the Premier League. I'm not impressed with the assist record. I think
this is
a hokey, fugazi record. Come on.
But what? If he's been studying since 03, man.
If you play for Manchester City, you score a million goals. You've got a million goal scorers on your team. You're sitting in the middle of the park. Everybody can pass the
but
ball.
But no one has done it from United in 17 years.
So he's done it from where? From United?
It can't be that easy.
Because United are a different team and Pogba's been injured. I mean, it's not that. It's not the assist record. I mean, honestly, like, I've become... As I age, I appreciate more aspects of analytics, and I appreciate less aspects such as goals, including penalty goals, and frankly, assists, because it matters so much.
Take his expected assists and see how many assists he has, and you'll be as happy.
It's not this that makes him a great player. All right, Jules, more quick hits. Let's bring it to Arsenal, but one last thought on assists, by the way. Remember, didn't Mesut Ozil have like 68 assists in like three games when he was at Real Madrid with Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah.
So was he as good as De Bruyne then?
No.
It's
amongst the best passers.
Stop it.
It counts. Right. It's important.
Arsenal lose to Aston Villa, but Jules, let me ask you about Bukayo Saka reportedly getting a call-up for the mighty Super Eagles of Nigeria. Is this in any way relevant to his Arsenal career?
I don't know. Yes and no. I don't know. I mean, you would lose him for the Africa Cup of Nations in January, February, every 2 years, which is not ideal, I guess. But apart from that, and he maybe would have more value as a player.
If he's an England player, he does have more value financially. Yeah.
But apart from that, it's his own choice. He would have to make, like many other players before who have two nationalities, like my own children, like your own children. At some point, you'd have to decide whether you feel better playing for one country or the other, where you feel that playing for one is better than playing for the other. You have more chance to win silverware in one. You have more chance playing for another one. Or I think it must be a really tough choice. Really, if you think about it, you know, if you really have the culture of where you were born and where you grew up for him in England, and you also have that big culture of where your family is coming from, your parents are coming from, and you really have both cultures and both all those values and everything to choose, must be really, really hard.
Yeah, I expect he'll be getting a call from Gareth Southgate the next 48 hours.
France football has decided no Ballon d'Or will be awarded this year, Gab, in 2020. I know how much you love these awards. You must be gutted.
So as you know, I think these awards are stupid popularity contests because of the way they're
Why
awarded.
Why then the players love them so much?
You know what? So they love them because they were raised on them, and we in the media have made a big deal out of it. When you say the players love them, you're talking about the two guys who keep winning them.
No,
one
that's
of them
not
in
true.
Particular.
Neymar wants it. Kylian Mbappe wants it.
Okay, because if Benzema, you ask Neymar, wants hey, Neymar, do you want to win the Ballon d'Or? What does he say? Oh, yes, I'd love to do it, but the performance of the team matters more.
But no, but
that's like, what all these people say, right?
But it's the same if you play NBA. You want to be the MVP. You know, they thrive on that as well. It's one of your ambitions. That's what you work for.
I got to say this about France football. The reason why they canceled it is, well, because the pandemic means that there's no level playing field. From a French perspective, from a Neymar and Mbappe perspective, that's definitely true because they haven't been playing football since the beginning of March. So they'll have a big statistical gap in their year. But that said, they were never going to win or not win the Ballon d'Or based on how many goals they score in Ligue 1. They'll do it, if they do it, by winning the Champions League or whatever else. So I don't know. This seems pretty hokey. I don't quite understand their thinking behind it. But like I said, I don't care. Jude Bellingham has officially moved to Borussia Dortmund. Jules, why should everybody be so excited?
Because he's one of the most talented and exciting 17-year-old that you could find in the world right now. And he made his debut for Birmingham at 16 and 2 months or something, and was very good in the championship. And
that's right. James Milner was about 11 when he made his debut. But I honestly haven't seen the guy.
But Jude Bellingham is more talented than James Milner was.
James Milner was at 30. But how does he stack up at 16, 17 with Jadon Sancho or Raheem at that age?
I think he's the same. It's the different profiles and different
or Mason
type
Greenwood.
Of players. Yeah, yeah. But I think he's right up there. It's the same kind of level. It's the same kind of talent. It's the same kind of drive and ambition. Different profile, different qualities than those three players that we mentioned. But for me, it's the same bracket where the next couple of years will be very important to see his development and how far he can go and how high he can go. But I don't know, a bit like Giovanni Reina, for example, who will join now. At Dortmund, you see those players and you think, okay, they're so ahead at 17 over everybody else their age and even great players at that age before, that you can only think that, you know, sky is the limit. Same for Sancho, same for Sterling at the same age, same with Mbappe at the same age. And then it's down to them now, between now and, let's say, the next 5 years to see how far they can go.
Just quickly on Dortmund, we've discussed Lucien Favre to death, but at some point, our friend Zork, who's not an alien, who's the director of football, his name sounds like comes from outer space. Very good footballer today, by the way. In terms of attacking midfielder, wingery types, I'm assuming this is what Jude Bellingham is.
Yes,
they're going to have to make some decisions because you can only play with 11 players. And between Sancho, Hazard,
Brandt.
Julian Brandt, Gio, Royce. Bellingham, Royce. They're going to have to.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a little tricky there, right?
Yeah, it is tricky. You would think that this is to prepare the post Jadon Sancho era, whether he goes this summer or the following summer, he will go. He only has 1 year left maximum at the club. So you prepare that.
I'm saying if you don't sell Sancho, you might need to move somebody else on because.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, you have to spread the minutes out.
You have to, but Rose is not getting any younger, for example, although he probably is more of a number nine now, 9.5. Yeah,
they have a pretty good number nine, too.
But, yeah, but, you know, I think too much talent, as we've always said, it can't be a bad thing either. IFAB have approved 5 substitutions for next season. It's up to each league to decide whether they want to keep them, to adopt it or not. Gab, you like this, you know I don't like this. You must be happy then.
I think it's necessary.
It's not.
It's necessary in the pandemic era. We have no idea what's going to happen. And look, you know, once again, you do this and then you get all the ex-pros who hate it. Like, you know, the same ones who hate the drinks break.
Ooh. But it's unfair. It's an unfair rule. Okay. 5 seconds.
I don't want to go back over this. It's not unfair.
It is unfair.
It gives a weaker team and a creative manager, somebody who actually understands.
It's not. He doesn't have as much talent on his bench.
It doesn't matter. It's a difference between talent on the pitch and talent on the bench. It's not, I have more talent on the bench. If they're much worse than your starters, then you will lose. And
but the big clubs don't have that.
It all depends how the team is built. But anyway, the point I wanted to make was, let's not get your panties in a twist. Like, oh, why are IFAB and FIFA interfering, blah, 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 land grab, and all this nonsense that some of these mental midgets put out there. Every league has an option if they want to do this. If you think it's right for your league, then you do this. Not just that. Every league also has the option to say, we're going to do this if the conditions are there. So if we all have a vaccine and there's no more social distancing and no issues and no fixture congestion and no nonsense and none of this garbage or none of this, what did he call it? What did your club called? None of this virus BS or whatever he called it.
Yeah.
Then we don't got a problem. Then you get rid of it. But all they're doing is giving you an option. Don't get your panties untwist over this. If it's right for you, then adopt it. Many were excited for Inter Miami, David Beckham's MLS franchise. I wonder if we're ever going to mention Inter Miami without mentioning David Beckham. It's not the best of starts, is it?
It's not at all, Gab. I mean, even before the pandemic and since the restart and the tournament, the MLS tournament in Orlando, they've been dreadful. I mean, they played 3 games, lost 3 times.
But they were close games, no?
Scored 2 goals, conceded 5. And for the 2 I've watched, they were not very good on the pitch. I mean, maybe it was close, but it was just not good enough. I don't think the squad is good enough. I think it's really hard with the pandemic as well as the first season. Let's be honest there.
They're 5 games into our existence or 3 games and you got to go.
But no, it's
give
it to Miami. But if you're a new franchise, that's not the start you want.
They have 15,000 coronavirus cases. They're playing in a freaking bubble in Orlando.
But they were not very good before.
And you're going to give Bex and my boy Jorge Mas a tough time.
Come on, man. I give them some excuses and
Jorge,
say,
pay no attention to the French man.
Man, you have to do better because what I saw was just not good enough. Full stop. And we give them a pass for this year because, as you said, it's a very strange year. But my God, for next season, you need to improve that squad and that level big time. And finally, Gab, my boy Samuel Umtiti is leaving Barcelona this summer, or at least the club wants him to move. He's 26. Where should he go, and will anyone take him?
I gotta defer to you. I think he's 26. There's still a footballer in there. Obviously, if he moves now, he's going to have a decent contract. What I would do, what I would invite clubs to do, and I know this is not going to happen, is a lot of them would be like, well, look, he won a World Cup, he's playing for Barcelona, blah, 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 and he was kept out of the side by Gerard Piqué and all this nonsense, right? He had a bad injury. He was really bad after he returned from his injury.
Yeah.
He's not a particularly technically gifted player. He's more of an athletic player.
Yeah.
If that's the kind of profile that fits the defender that you need, then you go for him. So I would say,
and left-footed as well, which is quite rare.
If you
want a left-footed player.
Pep, for example, should definitely not go for him.
Yeah,
for a million reasons. Somebody else in a different system. If you think his head is right, if you think that it's not the injury that's holding him back, then go for him. I mean, he has the pedigree, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think he still has a lot to offer if he can get fit. And that's a big if.
All right. Final bonus points, because we both watched the Liverpool trophy presentation last night. I'm in two minds about it, but I know you've got some issues.
No, listen, it was always going to be difficult anyway with no fans, even if the families of the players and the staff were there. It's not the same. It looked sad. I found it sad. And I know they were very happy and it's great and it's the first title in 30 years and they've been amazing and well done. But I felt sad for the players to have just no one there, to lift the trophy with no one there, you know, an empty black stadium. You know, that you don't wait 30 years.
Fireworks going off outside.
I know, but still, you don't wait 30 years for that. You don't have a season that you have for that. And I know it's nobody's fault. It's, you know, it's nobody's choice either.
I know where you're going. Before we get to that, what I don't understand is the celebration was when they won the title, right? And yeah, you had the, you know, in the Tunnel Stadium. I know, but this is the trophy presentation. Cares? It's just a big hunk of metal and Richard Masters, right? I think this would have been more spontaneous and better, given that there are no fans there, if they had done it that same night. That night when they won, you know they're
like Real Madrid, yeah.
If you need to send Richard Masters around with a copy of the trophy, then do that. Have him go there and like, oh look, and do something simple and a little more spontaneous, a little more real. That said, there's no good way to do this.
No, there's not. And yeah, it was always going to be difficult. I mean, club said.
And I was still moved because of Kenny.
Yeah, yeah.
When Kenny is Kenny there, was, yeah. Kenny brightens the Kenny room. Dalglish Kenny brightens was the world.
Highlight. Exactly. Kenny Dalglish was the highlight. There's no doubt. I think he was crying. You couldn't really tell. Ian Rush was on his phone. When
he wasn't on his phone. He was filming.
I mean, he could not work out his phone. He was just like like this. But it looked like Kenny was crying when the whole squad and staff were singing "You Never Walk Alone" again in front of no one, which is sad, but still, it was one of the most emotional "You'll Never Walk Alone" ever. And yeah, and Kenny looked, yeah, Kenny was the highlight of it. And the fact that his daughter Kelly was also presenting it here in the UK on Sky Sports, I thought that was very special.
She kept it together, though.
Yeah, she did. Jamie Carragher at some point seems to got really emotional as well, which I liked. It's just, yeah, I just felt sad for them. Where I didn't feel sad for, right, is Jordan Henderson. Now, Jordan Henderson, great guy. No, I've got no issue with the human being, the personality, the character. Love
the footballer.
It. Footballer, I'm not keen, but you know, you all know that because I've said it enough times. You know,
he does the best with the tools that he has. Yeah, exactly. And he was very important to Liverpool this season.
You are injured, okay? You're injured. You're on the bench. You're injured. You're in your tracksuit. Why? Why then you go up the stage and lift that trophy in your full kit, with your studs on, with your football socks on, and your shorts, and I guess the shirt, you can have it because it says champion and everything, but please keep your tracksuit bottom on, keep your trainers on, and just enjoy the moment with everybody else. I didn't get the whole
he was
full
channeling
kit,
his inner
John Terry,
his inner
2012
John Terry
thing.
But he wasn't wearing shin pads like John Terry.
I don't
though,
think he
fair.
Was, but you know.
Whatever.
Anyway, it was a little,
like said,
you know,
it's
it was
been 30
a little
years. Let's let these guys celebrate any way they want.
Of course, of course. And they deserve to have fans there. It's just a shame that they couldn't.
Yeah. And two things with that. One, Augie would point out about all the fans outside and get all grumpy about it, but he's not here, so you don't have to deal with his grump.
No, you don't.
But the other thing, I thought Klopp again nailed it with his line, which I said earlier, I'll say it again, about this, you know, virus BS. I don't know. I think mediatically, he's
amazing.
He's number one.
Yeah,
he's the greatest.
There's no one. No one can get even close to him.
All right. We'll say au revoir because you're going to the south of France, as people do.
To Ile de Ré in the west, in the Atlantic coast.
Oh, big waves.
Yeah, all right, waves, yeah.
I prefer the food in the south of France myself, but let's not be too snooty about this. Anyway, Robert will be in while you're gone.
I'll be listening.
But you're going to be back August 6th. We'll have a big show looking ahead to the Champions League.
Yeah, can't wait.
Till then, bye-bye.